Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Lauren.
Mike.
Lauren, are we actually back to in-person tech conferences now?
Sort of. I mean, if you consider going down to Cupertino, California, home of Apple, for a viewing party, then yeah, we were in person.
So it was sort of a vibe shift?
I don't know if I'd call it a full vibe shift. We didn't hear anything announced at WWDC that was like macOS vibe shift. But there's still a lot that happened this week that we should talk about.
All right, well, let's get to it.
Let's do it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
And I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
And we are also joined in person by Wired product writer Brenda Stoliar. Brenda, hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here in person and not on Zoom, where I am unmuting myself every 5 seconds. We are thrilled to have you in studio here.
Well, this week on Monday, Apple delivered its big keynote address at its annual Worldwide Developers Conference. And like almost everyone else, I watched it on my computer at my desk. I had two screens going. I had the video on one screen and all of my feeds on the other. There were two new MacBooks announced, a new homegrown chip, a bunch of updates to iOS and macOS, and we'll talk about all of that on today's show. But first, I wanted to ask about the event as the two of you experienced it, because unlike all of us plebeians, you were both actually there in person at Apple headquarters in Cupertino.
Yep, we were there in person. It was interesting. It was kind of this indoor-outdoor space. They opened up one of the giant glass walls of the spaceship at Apple Park. And so we were sitting in Cafe Max initially, having some breakfast. And then you could sort of roam out into the seated area. It was like being at a music festival, but like a lot nicer and a lot fewer people going to the bathroom directly on the grass.
And worse music?
No, the music was okay. You know, the intro music always kind of gets you jazzed up. But this was I've been to WWDC many times before. It was Brenda's first time. So I actually want to hear from Brenda what your experience was like.
First of all, Apple, I know, is probably listening to this podcast episode, so I would like to thank them for inviting me before I move forward in what I'm about to say. But no, it was really cool to be there in person and to finally experience what everybody's been talking about and like what, you know, my fellow reporters who have gone to the event before have always described to me. I will say, and I was telling Lauren this as we were walking through Apple Park, that it really felt like a summer camp because there was a lot of good energy all around with people that were working there. They were clapping for us while we were walking through. They were screaming things at us to get us hyped. stopped. And everybody was in a super good mood. So that was really cool because these tech events can be a little bland at times. So it was nice to, like, you know, kind of get that good energy flowing. But I will say, I think everybody probably heard Lauren and I start dying laughing when they started playing the pre-recorded event. And we both were live blogging the same thing at the same time, which is that I flew from New York to California to watch WWDC on a giant screen.
Outdoors.
In a lawn chair with the sun just beating down on us. And Apple definitely tried to tell us that they warned us ahead of time after the fact.
Yeah, a couple people said, oh, we called it a viewing event or a viewing party. And I was like, really? I just didn't remember that.
Yeah. For lack of a better word, they were gaslighting us for sure. They were like, you didn't know it was pre-recorded? And I was like, absolutely not. I would have seen that in the email. And they were like, oh, yeah, we definitely mentioned that. And I was like, I probably would have thought twice, maybe. Maybe my editors would have thought twice. I don't know. But regardless, I'm very grateful that I got to experience it in person because I really didn't think that was going to happen once the pandemic started.
Yeah, I think you really have to have a sense of humor about these things, both because of the pandemic and because it's Apple. I, for one, thought it was pretty worth it to be there in person. And I think the most important thing is that we got to see some of the new stuff in person, even though, as Brenda pointed out, the majority of our experience was sitting pretty far back from a stage and watching things on video. Right. So we watched the keynote, you know, on this, you know, pre-recorded on video. But then afterwards, we did have a few minutes to go to the Steve Jobs Theater and see some of the new hardware. Not a lot of the new software was on display. We got briefings about that afterwards, but we did see, like, some stuff.
And Tim Cook did a pop-in.
Oh, my God. Okay. So
Brenda really got a kick out of this.
Something that people really forget to mention when they come back from Apple Park is the difference between above ground and below ground at Apple Park. When they had taken us downstairs in the theater, all the walls were actually doors, and they were swiping their badges, and then all of a sudden the wall turned into a door, and then it's like this labyrinth, and you're going through all of these different areas, and it gave very sci-fi vibes, very Stranger Things vibes, which explains the whole Tim Cook thing where Lauren and I were, where you can go hands-on with the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro.
We were determined we were going to leave. We were like, okay, we've been here long enough. Yes. We're going to go to the visitor center now. And we start to head towards the door.
And there's this crowd. And Laura and I look at each other and we're like, what is happening? And it's Tim Cook that walks in. And he walks into the center of the circle. And I looked at Laura and I was like, what if we just left right now, during this moment? Because everybody was just you know, obviously eyes drawn to Tim Cook. I mean,
sure.
It's CEO a big of
the
deal.
Most powerful the biggest company in the world.
Right. Everyone was waiting for him to, you know, show up, and they start clapping for him, and then it just gets silent, and he starts walking around in a circle, and he just had the peace sign thrown up.
Oh, so it was like a photo op.
I guess so.
And at one point, he was standing hands on hips, and, you know.
Yeah.
It was just, I looked at Lauren. I looked at Lauren, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. And this is a moment when you see, the segmentation of the press, too, because there's the press who were there to ask a lot of questions and report back for our audience and basically try to get to the bottom of some of these major changes that Apple is making in its software strategy. And then there's press there that are, you know, they're more content creators or influencers, and so they just want to get the video for their TikTok or Instagram. There are photographers there who are just, you know, snapping photos for the wires, and so it's just their job to stand there and snap photos. And so Brent and I are like, we got to get to the visitor center and start, filing our stories. And there's just this, the scrum around Tim Cook, an odd silence staring at him. And we're like, oh, right, this is weird.
That was something that I just, it forever burned into my brain. I was not ready for that.
So speaking of the announcements, of all the things that we saw, I think probably the one that's going to make the biggest difference to most people is iOS, because mm-hmm. it runs on iPhones, and there are a billion iPhones in the world. Tell us what you think are the biggest changes coming to iOS that people should know about.
I think some of the biggest changes, in my personal opinion, coming with iOS 16 are changes in messaging. There are still no away messages, mm-hmm. which I'm obviously a proponent of. But in iOS 16, you are going to have the ability to mark messages as unread, which is great for just triaging and managing your messages. You're going to have the ability to edit words. Apple gave a very funny example on stage of someone saying, "Hey, babe, can you send the documents?" And then they edited it to say, "Hey, Gabe," because presumably babe is a coworker. Also, you're going to have the ability to unsend messages, errant messages, within a few seconds of sending them. So those seemed pretty significant to me. Of course, all of this is between messages users, and by messages, we mean iMessages, and by that, we mean people using iPhones and iPads and that sort of thing. So I'm sorry, Mike, I'm still going to be sending inappropriate text messages to you on your Pixel and not be able to edit them.
And I will be responding with a green bubble.
That's right, you will be. Thank you very much. Yes. Brenda, what stood out to you from iOS?
I think there was a huge emphasis on collaboration across all the operating systems. So you have shared group tabs, iCloud shared photo library, SharePlay and Messages, share button for Apple's apps like Keynote and Pages. And then you also have the Freeform app that's coming, which is also supposed to be this collaborative shared experience. And it just feels like Apple really wants us to really beam in on what everyone is doing together, which makes sense during a time like the pandemic, because we are still in a pandemic. And during our briefing, they explained that it does make minor things a little bit easier when you're working remotely, like when you send over a document and you don't know what changes were made in the new version, or you don't know which version was sent over. So minor things like that you don't think about on a daily basis, these really solve those problems in a way that's seamless and easy to navigate. But yeah, it feels like Apple just really wants us together, but remotely on our devices.
Right. It's kind of their version of a social network, because Apple has never been successful in developing a formal or official social network. A lot of you will remember Ping, something like that. But the connective tissue between all of these apps, that is their social network.
Yeah. And it does feel like a lot. Like, they threw a lot of collaboration at us during WWDC.
Yeah, you know, I sort of felt watching it that the emphasis on office-style productivity felt a little odd, just because I don't necessarily think of Apple software as, like, office collaboration tools. I think of it as, like, managing personal life, right? Like, maybe you'll use email or you'll use a spreadsheet for something. But, like, when we show up at the office, we're using, like, the tried and true legacy enterprise tools, like Microsoft and G Suite, right? I'm sure there are offices out there that use all of these collaborative tools that Apple makes. I just have not worked in any of them.
100%. That is very true. I think Apple definitely picks up on the fact that there is a gap to be filled with being taken seriously in office settings, because it is a very common consumer product for just the average person at home, or for fun, or socially. It's easy to use, but I feel like there is room for it to grow in the office space and the office setting.
So we don't have time to talk about everything, obviously, but Lauren, I wanted to get your take on what we saw that's coming to the iPad with multitasking. They showed off some new multitasking features. There's been a lot of chatter about this over the last couple of weeks on the internet. I know that you've been following this. What did you think of what they showed?
I had high hopes for iPad. You might say, I hope for iPad.
You might.
I hope for iPad. Not so much. So I think with the latest iPad OS, there's going to be a tiny bit more flexibility around windowing. This is going to be called Smart Manager. And it's a way for you to run multiple apps on your home screen at the same time and have the ones that are not actively in use easily available to you. But even calling it quote-unquote flexibility isn't quite accurate, because it's still Apple controlling how you multitask on this screen. So over the past few years, we've seen the merging of iPad and Mac laptops a little bit, both from a hardware perspective, because some of them share a chip now, and from a software perspective, as we've seen like things like Docs, right, appear on an iPad, and that's like traditionally on a Mac and that sort of thing. But this to me is still one of the biggest differences between those two experiences, that on Mac OS, you still have full control over how you control and set your windows versus iPad OS. And then on Mac OS, which is called Mac OS Ventura, not Mammoth, as we had thought, honestly, this stood out to me least on Monday. I'd love to hear Brenda's take on this, because there were some changes in Mail that look exactly like what Google has been doing for years.
Yeah.
You know, preferences on the Mac has now been changed to system settings, and it looks a little bit more like iOS, the settings app. We're also getting to the point where some of the software updates on macOS are not going to work for a lot of machines that people are still using, like here at Condé Nast, where we know people who still have 2013 MacBooks.
There's one in this room right now.
That's right. Yeah. Brenda, what did you make of this?
Yeah, so just give us the option to use macOS on an iPad. I know that wasn't going to happen, but just having something that is like so similar to macOS, but they can still call it iPadOS, and we didn't get that. We just got one feature called Stage Manager, and we did see a demo during our virtual briefings, but I really have to just try it for myself, and I just feel like already, based on how it's explained, based on what I'm seeing visually, I can't grasp it easily. And that, I think, is already saying something, where I'm like, is this how you do it? Or like, you resize windows, you can group things here, but like, is this going to feel like an extra step, or is this going to feel intuitive like macOS does? And something tells me it's not. So, and then with macOS Ventura, yeah, it's funny that you said nothing really stood out, because I had to look at the story that we wrote before this podcast, because I was like, wait a second, because it's all blending together. But I think the biggest thing that stood out that was different from that was continuity camera, that Apple is just like obsessed with the ability to use your iPhone camera as a webcam. They love it.
They're very excited about this.
Yeah.
They think it's like,
I'm sure a lot of people out there with iPhones and new Macs are excited about it too.
Well, this is the physical representation of Apple's strategy to get us just using all Apple products, yeah. Right? It's like, it's kind of like when Apple Watch came out, and they're like, here's this, you know, the world's best smartwatch, but also you need an iPhone for it. Mm. Those two things have to be paired. And like, in order to have this great camera feature, you must have an iPhone tethered to an iMac. It's all just becoming the same product.
It is.
Yes.
So we should mention that all the things we're talking about, all these new features coming to iOS, iPadOS, macOS, they're all going to show up in the fall. Apple usually puts out all of its new software in September after showing it off in June. So we just saw a preview. We haven't used it yet. And you'll be able to experience it all in just a few months on all your devices. So let's take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll talk about things that are available much sooner than that, the hardware.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Okay, so we should definitely talk about the new hardware and Apple's new chip that made its debut on Monday, the M2. Now, Brenda, you are our MacBook reviewer, and you got an in-person briefing on the new laptops after the event. There was a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro announced. Which one should we start with?
I think we should start with the MacBook Air, which is clearly Apple's favorite child of the moment. It's almost like MacBook Pro who is how I felt during the keynote and also during our briefing afterwards. I'm going to quickly run through all of the new things you're going to get with the MacBook Air, and then I'll run through what you're getting with the MacBook Pro, because You'll see the difference. So let's see. We have a bigger and brighter display, MagSafe charging, a boxier frame instead of that wedge design, a 1080p camera, new color options, thinner bezels, speakers are integrated into the keyboard, and of course an M2 chip. So it feels like the list goes on, and they really packed as much as they could into the MacBook Air as far as new features and new design. And then the MacBook Pro, that has an M2 chip and a touch bar.
And a touch bar, which nobody wants.
No, apparently Apple is convinced, though, they're keeping this around because there are people that want a touch bar, according to them.
You know, and I think you probably also get, like, different graphics performance on the MacBook Pro than you would on the Air, right? There's, like, different memory. It's just, like, pro features, like, things that take it, like, one notch. But as far as the hardware design goes, it feels like the Air is more advanced as far as, like, Apple's design thinking all went into that machine, right?
Right. So, of course, you are going to get that extra processing power. There's an 8-core CPU and a up to 10-core GPU on the M2, which is two extra GPU cores than the M1. So you are going to get that extra processing power. The M2 it's really worth noting for anybody that's looking into it. Like, I really want to stress that this is still considered an entry-level chip in their lineup, because you do have the M1 Pro, the M1 Max, and the M1 Ultra, and that is not better than the M2.
Got it.
So it's basically just an upgrade to the M1.
Huh. But it's called the M2, which is certainly a way to sell MacBook Pros.
And certainly
one way.
And it is an upgrade. And, like, if you've been looking for a laptop for a while and you've sort of been holding out, then, like, just get the Air with M2, because that seems like absolutely the machine to buy, at least to my eyes.
Yeah, it sounds like what Brenda is describing is that the gap between this new MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro is closing. The gap is closing, and the price points are not that different either. So they don't really feel like totally separate lines of laptop.
No, especially when they couldn't even just upgrade. Like, you're getting a 1080p camera on the MacBook Air and a 720p camera on the MacBook Pro. You're also getting just an old design. And with the M1 MacBook Pro and the M1 MacBook Air, that was my big criticism, and I'm sure it was a lot of people's thoughts, where there was no differentiation aside from their fans. Their active cooling system.
Right.
The literal fans. Yeah.
Not the fans. Who shout at you when you enter Apple Park. Welcome.
Right. Okay, yeah. So obviously the MacBook Air has, not obviously, I'm not sure everybody knows this, but the MacBook Air doesn't have fans. The MacBook Pro has fans. And for the quote unquote pro user, that active cooling system is likely super useful for them when they're editing, you know, super intense projects and heavy workloads.
Yeah.
So that could be the one defining thing that keeps them from getting an Air and a Pro. But it just feels like a crime that they're selling this MacBook Pro with a 13-inch and didn't even throw in any additional Pro features that they have on the 14-inch and the 16-inch, like ProMotion or maybe an extra port or, you know, really just anything that can help make the case for it. Because at this point, maybe just look into the 14-inch MacBook Pro. Like, you want to feel like you're getting something for your money. And I know I still have to use it and get my experience with it, but honestly, I feel like I should just be telling people to get the M1 MacBook Pro at, like, a third-party retailer for cheaper.
I'm most excited about MagSafe, actually. I'm a MagSafe adherent. I love the design of it, where it just, you can just pop it out without having to worry about messing up the cable or messing up the computer. It's also safer. And we should note that the MacBook Air has both MagSafe and USB-C charging available on it. And maybe the reason it has USB-C charging is because of the recent ruling in the EU that everybody knew was coming, that said that laptops are going to be required to have USB-C charging. Apple still wanted to put MagSafe back onto the Air. It had taken it off. It was still available on some MacBook Pros, and now it's back on the MacBook Air. I think it's a great addition. I love that. But I also love the flexibility of being able to choose. So you can keep one charger at home and the other charger at the office and just always be able to charge your laptop. It's kind of nice.
So the EU ruling was for both laptops and phones.
It's for, so the EU legislators passed a law this week saying that all mobile devices, that's like phones, tablets, laptops, headphones, Kindles, have to use the same charger by the end of 2024. So manufacturers who have not made the jump to USB-C are going to be required to put USB-C on their devices by the end of 2024.
Right on.
It's a good thing for everybody, right?
It sounds like it.
Except for the Lightning adapter on
iPhones. Except if you're Apple and you make proprietary charging standards and ports.
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
So Lauren, any final thoughts on the computers?
So Brenda did have the chance to go hands-on with the new MacBook Pro. I did not. I saw it from a distance in the hands-on, content capture area. I have to say I was a little bit surprised that Apple announced the M2 because, as Brenda pointed out, some of the specs feel a little bit more like a boosted M1. But they couldn't keep announcing the M1 forever, and Apple plans these chips years and years in advance. You know, I'm very certain they're already planning the M4 chip. This is all Apple's custom silicon, which is a big move for the company because they had been, you know, designing their own custom architecture for iPhone for years, but we kind of knew this was coming for Macs, and now it's in Macs. So from a timing perspective, this was probably the right timing for M2. Plus, it feels like maybe they had some excess MacBook Pro inventory and had to, you know, they had to sell it somehow. Next year's chips are probably going to be a little bit more impressive because that's when TSMC's 3-nanometer fabrication process, like the way that they actually make these chips.
This is the factory in Taiwan that builds
right.
the things.
That's right. This is like supposedly these chips are going to be ready next year, and that's going to offer a lot of boosts in terms of performance, power consumption, just the area for computing. It's like that's going to be an impressive leap, but it just hasn't happened yet. So Apple's continuing the march, you know, with the MacBook laptops. But to Brenda's point, like this maybe isn't like the biggest leap in chips that we heard about this week.
Right. All right. Well, that seems like a good place to end it. So let's take another break. And when we come back, we'll do our recommendations.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here. Every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, this is the last segment of the show where we all recommend things that our listeners might enjoy. Brenda, as our guest, you get to go first. What is your recommendation?
Stranger Things, specifically season 4. I haven't finished it yet, but if you are the, I don't know, probably only person on the planet that has yet to watch Stranger Things, just do it. You're not cool if you don't watch it. It's so far, I mean, I'm loving it. I know you're also like on season 4.
Yep.
And the one thing about the show that I will say is every time a season comes out, I say this is my favorite season. And I'm starting to think that season 4 might be my new favorite season. So
it's a lot stronger than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. I mean, 30 million per episode?
That's how much they're spending?
Yeah. I'm like almost 99.9% sure that it's 30 million. So Netflix is just throwing money at this show, and I'm here for it.
At least a million of that is going to Kate Bush because they play her song on a loop throughout the entire season.
Oh, my God. Yes. She probably just woke up one morning and had a had a lot more money.
Also the episodes are really long. Each one is over an hour, so each episode feels like an installment in a film series, which is kind of nice.
Yes, literally. I binge watch, and this one has taken me. I'm like embarrassed to say I haven't finished it yet because I usually just watch it in one sitting, and these are taking me a little time. 5 hours go by, and I'm not done.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a horror movie, so there's a lot of blood and violence and trauma and, you know, disturbing images and stuff. So I think if people haven't seen it, maybe just because they don't like horror movies.
Yeah, yes. Trigger warnings for sure. There are many. So, yeah, it's definitely not an easy watch, but it's worth it if you can watch. So.
And Netflix did the fun thing where they're showing the concluding episodes in a month.
Yes. I didn't know that, like, when it came out, and I was ready to just, like, I also thought season 4 was the last season. It's not. Yeah. Season 5 is. Oh. So I was ready to say goodbye. Like, I was preparing, because this is, like, literally one of my favorite shows of all time. And I was really preparing myself emotionally and mentally to say goodbye. And they're like, nope, we got one more. Like, we're coming back.
That's pretty exciting.
But, yeah. So
I must be very uncool because I don't watch it.
Oh my God, I was not also targeting on Torrance.
It's totally okay. I am uncool. We know this.
No.
I watched the first season. I couldn't get into it.
That's You're okay. still very cool. I promise. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
I promise.
You're so kind
I did
to
not
say
mean
that.
I just... people make fun of me for not watching Game of Thrones, so it's fine.
I've never watched that either. Okay. Yeah. Wow. No, but it's Stranger Things, like, I gave it a chance. And I'm not often into supernatural, you know, series and movies. So there was that, like, the whole underworld thing just didn't grab me. Right. I thought it was a little bit of over-manufactured nostalgia, but I know people love it. I think Millie Bobby Brown is, like, super cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I get the appeal. Also, here's the thing. I just canceled Netflix.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
I hadn't watched it in so long. And people kept talking about Ozark. So I think if I were going to go back, it'd probably be for Ozark. But I've been using Hulu and Apple TV Plus and HBO Max.
I will say, I think that a lot of people are going to cancel Netflix. This might be a whole other episode, but I think a lot of people are going to cancel Netflix after Stranger Things, to be completely honest. Because you're not the first person that said this. I've heard this, like, multiple times now.
Yeah, it was like $15 a month. And I was like, I'm just not using this.
Yeah.
Inflation.
All right, Lauren, here's your chance to redeem yourself.
Okay.
By telling us what your recommendation is so you can say something cool so we all think you're cool again.
Oh, no. I'm just going to bury myself deeper.
No, please.
So Brenda and I were chatting this morning before we came into the office, and I was like, I don't have a recommendation this week. And she said, what are you into? And we kind of, you know, and I just said, I don't know. The only thing I've been doing is sleeping and listening to ocean sounds at night. So this is actually something I've been doing for quite a while. I have a Google Nest Hub, one of Google's smart displays, in my bedroom. It does not have a camera. It has a little radar sensor. And every night I say, hey, G, I'm not going to trigger all of your smartphones. Hey, G, play ocean sounds. And it plays ocean sounds all night long. I take a melatonin and I go to sleep. And I highly, highly recommend this. Brenda, you said you use rain sounds?
Yeah, on my Nest Mini. I used to live above a punk rock bar in New York. My apartment was right above it, and that was the only thing that got me to sleep. So I had to set a routine on my Nest Mini where all I said was, hey, G, good night, and it would turn my light off. It would start the rain sounds. I would take a melatonin, and that was the only way I could sleep. So
we're in agreement.
Yeah.
Everyone who's listening right now should. We're shilling for Google hardware. You know, go out and get a Nest Hub Mini. It's going to listen to everything you say.
It works on all the smart speakers.
But yeah, it does. Any smart speaker, you can say play ocean sounds, and typically it'll pull from whatever music service or streaming service it defaults to. But if you have a subscription to one of the streaming services, you can also set it to default to that one. I think this one, I'm probably just using YouTube or Google Play Music, because I've never directed it to Spotify.
Yeah, there is no Google Play Music anymore.
See?
It's all just YouTube.
What am I even doing? Why am I even a tech reporter? I don't even know. Really? There's no... Okay, no, actually, that's Blankety Google's fault. Because Google changes names and services
it's
all the time.
It's very confusing.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, if you just need a little relaxation before bed at night, a little white noise, or you need to block out the punk rock band that's jamming below you, play ocean sounds. Hey, G, play ocean sounds. Take melatonin, drift off. Actually, don't take, like, medical advice from me. I'm not a doctor. Check with your doctor, not the internet, before you take anything before bed. But that's my method. Mike, what's your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is a podcast. It's called Why We Run. And it's interviews between a running coach and people in her world that run. And there's a personal connection here because, first of all, the host of the show is the running coach, Beth Baker, who's one of my oldest friends. I met Beth in 1989.
Oh, so you guys were babies.
1988, yes. Mm-hmm. We've been friends our whole lives. And she's a delightful person. And she runs a running coach business up in Seattle. And she's had this podcast for a while. And she used to run with her guests. So they would mic up and go for a run and talk, while they were running. Pandemic kind of shut it down. She shut it down at the end of 2019 and didn't start it back up. But now it's back. There's a new season. And one of the guests is me. I was on the show. So I just want to give a quick plug to the show. The other guest that has, there's more guests coming, but the only ones that are up right now are the ones where she interviews me, and then one where she interviews the writer Myrna Valerio, which is a great episode. So it's a lot of fun because it talks about like how we got into running, and she asks like advice or problems and how you overcame those problems, advice that you got from people, what was good advice, what was bad advice. And then she also offers her own advice as a running coach to the guest that the listener can then take and apply to their own, you know, running program.
And what advice did she give you?
Well, she actually, like, she was at my house a couple of months ago, and I talk about this on the show, but I was telling her that I was preparing for a 10K, and I like had this whole system worked out where I was building up distance over a period of time, and she just like shut me down, and she's like, you could just run the 10K tomorrow. It's all mental. Once you're past a certain point, it's all mental. So that's the best advice she's ever given me, is like, it's all in your head, which is, you know, mostly true. As long as your conditioning is up, it's mostly in your head.
Yeah, that's what I hear a lot about people who run marathons and triathlons and all that. They always say it's mental. It's really good.
That's really great, Mike. I cannot wait to listen.
Yeah, same.
Is this part of your foray into fitness influencing? Like, are you, next episode, are you going to be like, and I just want to talk about these new sneakers from On, a Swiss company. Boy, are these sneakers incredible.
I mean, I don't want to get into SponCon.
Okay.
But I do wear those shoes, and they are great, and I talk about them a lot. So thank you for calling me out.
Oh, you could try the WatchOS 9 feature.
Oh, you could.
I was a little bit jealous of iPhone people when I saw that at the WWDC keynote, the fact that it does like stride length and all that. But, you know, I'm not a big like metrics person. I just basically look at my heart rate and my distance, and that's about it.
And you wear a Garmin watch.
Which I do.
Is very much runner approved because the battery life lasts a really long time.
Yeah, I only have to charge it once every four runs. So, you know, take that, Apple Watch. Anyway, that is our show for this week. So, Brenda, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me and for letting me crash the San Francisco office.
You're always welcome.
Please come back again.
I would love to.
Thanks to everyone for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. Our producer is Boone Ashworth, who also runs. Goodbye. We'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jessie Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.